count it up, count it up, count it up, count it, count it up, count it up, count it up, count it.
Final hour, Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 on the TSN app. We got Darren Dreger, our hockey insider, coming up here in just a moment. Leafs Rangers tonight, battle of the original six. You got Shesterkin, you got Samsonov. Samsonov making his fourth straight start, which I think is meaningful. You know, I mean, Matt Murray has had some really good run here, and he's a veteran. He's got the two cup rings. He's making a lot more money. But as of now, you know, in a season where everything's basically going the way of the Maple Leafs, short of what Boston's doing, a little competition. Nothing wrong with that. You keep playing well, keep playing. And I would suggest that that's exactly what should happen. Well, Samsonov plays really well tonight. Play him on Friday.
Absolutely. And Valiquette was on, Steve Valiquette, with the Rangers broadcast at MSG. What was the stat? When the game's tied, Samsonov's just got a better vibe to him. Mm-hmm. Better results.
Yeah. Better save percentage, 912 to 866 when the game is tied. So, you know, that's a relevant stat because
I'll
like
take
you said,
that stat. Hazy, you like that stat or no?
Yeah, I like it. I mean, I don't it's the game starts tied, you know. So what I don't know what like I think you immediately go to 2-2 third period.
You.
Yeah, but my point being is like you immediately go to an extreme example of overtime. What happens? You know, like there is a lot of time played where it is tied. But I think that's a valuable stat. And I think even eye test would suggest, you know, Samsonov at home has been unbeatable. Like he's been very good. He literally has not lost in regulation.
Yeah. No, and he's been rock star at home. And they've kind of backed it up. There was one or two games early on where they kind of outscored it. Remember, it was like a 5-4 or something like that, where even if he didn't have his A stuff, they still found a way to win. And that's, you know, there's nothing wrong with that, getting support from your teammates. So tonight will be a big test because I think the Rangers are a team that play pretty loose, but they generate a lot. Like they can generate chances, so you've got to be kind of on your toes in the counterattack. That's the one thing I liked about the Leafs game the other day. You know, for me, was they were really good on kind of the counterattack or stretch plays. Just kind of, you know, getting to the Islanders, you know, the alley-oop plays or the Hail Mary, like just ice where it's 50-50 and, hey, we'll race into it and we'll go after it. They did it three or four times. Like the Yarncroke goal stands out, right, because the Nylander.
That was a great play by Nylander.
It was a great play. It was a great play. But, like, there was four or five times you could tell that's what they're doing because the Islanders are very aggressive in the forecheck. Mm-hmm. They were like, we will just relieve pressure, get it into an area where it's a foot race, and then we'll take our chances there. So that
Noodles.
Was a good tactic.
As far as Samsonov, if you were the goaltending coach of the Toronto Maple Leafs and Sheldon Keefe was looking for some assurance or questions as far as saying, like, is Samsonov for real? Like is this for real, and could he be the guy going into the playoffs over Matt Murray? Because I'm pretty sure the idea was Matt Murray might have been the guy with his experience come playoff time. I guess there would never be assurance or a guarantee, but when would you be able to say, yeah, he is the guy I would go with if you were the goaltending coach? Because you've had that position before.
Yeah, I mean, they both have played 20 games, right? Murray's played in 19. I think Samsonov is just north of 20. Like, they're, you know, it's half the game. So it's that comfort level. This is probably where they're going, hey, we're going to give him a 4 or 5-game stretch here, see how he responds. He's rolling well. You know, even in Montreal the other night, I thought he made some big saves. The only thing, I've always felt that Samsonov is a more skilled goaltender. Like, Murray's very structured, uses his size. Samsonov kind of has a little bit of Hasek vibe to
him. You're going Gary Bettman on me, Noodles. You're going Gary Bettman
on me. No, I'm not. I'm just telling you right now. If you ask me today, I can't tell you who is going to be the starter.
But that's what I want to know. What do you need to see from him to say, I would actually, Samsonov would be my guy?
It's money in the bank where you go, that guy I trust every night to play. Like, it becomes the instinct. Coaches have instincts, too. Whether they'll admit it publicly or not, they like one of the goals. Like, they'll like one player more than the other. They trust one player more than the other. You know, it's easy. Well, I trust McDavid to score. No, you know, you're not arguing on that one. But who are you putting out in a defensive situation on a big draw? Are you going to put Matthews out, or maybe it's Tavares, because Tavares has a winning percentage. Like, it's instinct. So what I'm saying is I haven't seen enough out of either one of these guys this year to go clear-cut number one, the other guy's got to sit. They both have had pockets. That's where I'm not giving you Gary Bettman. I'm just saying I just haven't seen enough.
But doesn't it come down to, really, with Samsonov, it's actually going to be about what Murray does in order to make that determination. In other words, if Murray isn't trustworthy,
he's going to steer it one way or the other. Murray.
Exactly. Like, it's, if they're both playing well, then I'm not sure how Samsonov separates himself, unless it's so, substantial, the statistics he's putting up. He wins every single night. His, he got a 940 save percentage, whatever. But if Murray is pulling his weight, then I think Samsonov might have to do something extreme to separate. Right. But if Murray makes it easy, then Samsonov might simply just have to make sure he doesn't rock the boat. Get into the doghouse, and you could get it by default. To talk about this, among other things, league-wide, here's our TSN hockey insider, Darren Dreger, joining us ahead of the Leafs-Rangers tonight. Dregs, and I'm curious how you would answer that question from, if you're playing the role of Sheldon Keefe, what do you have to see from either goalie to make an established choice here that, like, Samsonov's the guy? Samsonov would get a game one start between now and that actually taking place.
Yeah, without knowing exactly how, the Toronto Maple Leafs break down their goalie schedule, Noodles might be able to weigh in on this. Like, again, not specific to Toronto, but how you would normally as we creep into, not the later part, middle part of the second half of the season. You have to be a little bit tighter, I think, but they love the idea of having competition in every position, Certainly not with some of the guys that they're juggling on the back end, the bottom six of the lineup from a forward perspective. But it wouldn't be a bad thing to have Murray come back. Sorry, I'm distracted. I've got a text coming in here, and shouldn't really matter to the program, but it's related to another NHL topic. Whether it's Matt Murray or Ilya Samsonov, I mean, the good news is Samsonov of late has been solid, and prior to that, Matt Murray wasn't. So Matt Murray's had a little bit of time to reset and go through what he ever has to go through with Curtis Sanford. But best-case scenario, wouldn't it be, as you get to, again, the later stages of the regular season, have both guys sharp and ready, and then you have to make determination at that point. Right now, Samsonov is the better of the two. But I can't imagine that Sheldon Keefe or, management wants, to not test it moving forward. Like, for now it's Samsonov, but I got to believe they're going to give Matt Murray every opportunity to claw back and make that competition as fierce as it needs to be.
Yeah, I'll just finish off kind of what I was saying before we brought you in on Dregs too. Like, it wasn't that long ago when we were all having this conversation and Joe from the Bridge was putting up, boards going, Leafs goaltending concerns in the last 10 games. Both of those guys were struggling.
Yeah.
So, O asked the question, like, what do you need to see? Well, stability and consistency. And out of both of them, then it becomes a coin flip and who you trust. So that's why I'm not there, because it wasn't that long ago that we were having a conversation going, what the hell's wrong with the Leafs goaltending? So you just can't pivot week to week. You need more consistency. That's where I was going.
Yeah, and I agree with that, and I think that's fair. And I honestly think that has to be the way Sheldon Keefe and the coaching staff are looking at this. And, based on body language, based on reports I'm getting from the Maple Leafs, it's not like Matt Murray is sitting there jilted and feeling that, things are tough right now. No, I mean, it's part of fighting for your position. So I still think it's still healthy between those two guys.
With Darren Dreger, TSN Hockey Insider. How is the league, based on who you're talking to, Dregs, how did they respond to Gary Bettman's claim last night that nobody tanks? The tanking doesn't exist in the NHL. Does anyone actually believe that, or do we all know the true answer?
No, I mean, well, you're leading the witness here.
Yes, I am.
Yeah, but I see. I don't want to sound like a guy that beats a drum for Gary Bettman, but I do understand and I appreciate what he's saying, because to a degree I believe it. And you know, not to go down this path again, we all agree. Players are going to play, coaches are going to coach. So it comes down to management and ownership. And yeah, of course there are certain situations and you can, you know, pretty much identify right now who the teams are in the NHL where management is being brutally honest with their coaches and their players. We're not giving you any help. This is what it is. And in fact, we're going to move out players. That's the reality. So is that how we define tanking? I guess so, probably. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, I know that there were eyebrows raised when Cole Caulfield last week was, you know, all of a sudden deemed to be, you know, needing of shoulder surgery. But, you know, there's a situation where he probably played 10, maybe less games where it was dicey, where they felt like they were going to have to pull the plug. And then they just decided that they needed to. Well, is it convenient to the Montreal Canadiens? It certainly appears that way to be on the outside. And then from Caulfield's perspective, you know, he's having a great year. He's scoring goals, one of the few in Montreal. Why would he leave that much on the table when he's, you know, fully engaged in a contract extension? So Gary was what Bettman always is, right? He's dismissive, he's in your face, and he's borderline combative, which is unnecessary. Like, he defines what tanking is. Well, okay, well, 30 years ago, maybe, but that's not the way it is now. Like, no different than any other system that the NHL has developed, be it the salary cap system, whatever. These guys are smart people. They find ways to angle around it. So we can apply whatever word we want. Bettman doesn't like the word tanking. I get it to a point, but, I mean, let's be clear here. You're going to look at teams and how they unload in the very near future, and how do you describe it as anything other than clearing the deck so you've got a better opportunity to the draft and you can rebuild or try and get your foundation back in track? Well, what is that? What is that? I mean, it's kind of another definition, I would think.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the timing of it also, I think, hurts Bettman because of who is available this year, because it's Bedard. And he is now being ranked at a level where McDavid was and Crosby was. And O brought this point up earlier that I think where this tanking conversation gets to in terms of selling it is the owners are in on it. Because if your GM goes to you and says, hey, if we bring Bedard in, we're going to sell a million jerseys, we're going to sell tickets, we're going to be on national TV. Like, that is so valuable. Like, Connor Bedard is going to get an entry-level contract, but he's worth tens of millions, possibly hundreds of millions in terms of franchise value. That's what he represents.
Right. I agree, man. I agree. And, you know, we're not ready to, even though there's been that debate and much of it is, been, you know, created by the Quizmaster, right? Like, leading up to the World Juniors. what Connor Bedard is he a superstar or is he a generational player? Well, how are we going to know that until we see this kid step onto the ice and be a star in the National Hockey League? But isn't it curious to most of us, we see all these trades in the Ontario Hockey League, and this player goes out for umpteen picks, and this player and that player. They're all very, very good players. You know, the Regina Pats did a great job very early on of saying, yeah, we're not interested in trading Connor Bedard. And maybe Bedard didn't want to get traded too, but what, like, he's not going back to the Western Hockey League next year. Like, where's the value in all that? Well, it has to be financial, at least from my perspective. So the jury is still out on what this kid is going to be, but what we know, as Bob McKenzie acknowledged earlier this week on SportsCenter, is that call him whatever you want, a star, a generational player, whatever, he is well ahead of the pack in terms of what June is going to look like at that draft. And anybody who's watched this kid play and saw him play and what he did at the World Juniors, I mean, you don't need to be a pro scout or an NHL general manager to realize what this kid is going to bring to your organization. But again, you know, to go back to the whole tanking theme, it fits in theory, but only from a help perspective and what your team is willing to do or not willing to do to make your club better until the end of the regular season. And that's where it becomes even more apparent, I would think.
Dregs, another number one overall pick has taken the ice tonight with the Rangers, Lafreniere. When do you think an organization says, we didn't take the right guy? With Timmy Stützle, he looks pretty good. Yeah. He signed that long-term contract. Like, when is it not too early to say, man, that's not the right guy?
I mean, it's a great question, O. And without sitting in those meetings, it's an educated guess, but I think it's a fair point, right? Because you look at the New York Rangers and, you know, this team that thought that they were going to be, you know, certainly a contending team, if not a top contending team this year, they needed those young guys to take another step. And not just Lafreniere, it's Capocacco on top of that. So in my world now, we're starting to sort through the speculation of those type of names. Quentin Byfield's another name out of Los Angeles. I mean, God, we've even heard rumblings of, you know, would Ronnie Francis and the Seattle Kraken part with Shane Wright for, a good piece like Bo Horvat or Ryan O'Reilly? That, to me, seems excessive. Oh, you know Ronnie better than anyone. We know him as being a very conservative general manager. Bit early there, but have you seen enough in New York when you look at Lafreniere or you look at Capocacco to go, look, our window maybe isn't closing, but it's starting to lean a little bit, and here's our specific need. So if you're looking at a piece like that, I feel like, you're only moving one of those parts if you're committing to extending that player in that trade. It's possible. Like, some of the forward names that are in play here, they've been out there for a while, but I would think that they're least curious of conversation if you're Chris Curry or Ronnie Francis or Chris McFarland in Colorado, Don Waddell in Carolina. Go down the list of these teams that have to be intrigued if you're willing to give up a good piece to get that player that you want.
Dregs, you're starting to see, not that the chatter had died down, but is there a lot more chatter? Do you feel like maybe some of the trades that have been brewing, the trigger might be pulled sooner than later? Or do you feel like it'll be close to the deadline just because of the cap and you're bleeding out some of the money type of thing?
Yeah, more of the latter, Noodles, to be fair. Yeah. Like, I guess I look at Carolina because of the injury issues and whatnot. But Carolina might utilize, Pacioretty goes down and he's done. So now they have cap space. So where does that kind of game of poker chicken tip towards the buyer? And that's really what we're going to find out here after the All-Star, I think. I don't see, there's nothing on a front burner, as Cliff Fletcher used to say, that leads me to believe that a team is going to jump here. But if you're a team like Carolina, if you're a team like Edmonton, go down the list. I mentioned Seattle, maybe Colorado. That feels like they want to get ahead of the market. Maybe they've got to do something a little bit more dramatic, but it still feels like it's post All-Star. So it's kind of sad for our industry, and we've talked about this collectively, guys, internally, if not externally. But, we should be talking about, here's what we know, right? Like, here are the teams that are interested in Ryan O'Reilly, even though he's another month away from being healthy. Here's the teams we know are interested in Bo Horvat. Here's the teams that we think are interested, know are interested in Eric Carlson, or go down the list. And we don't. Like, two times a week on Insider Trading, we kick the tires based on good sourcing, but there's nothing that leads us to believe that anything is getting close to getting done.
Yeah, that is too bad. And at some point it should happen. Hopefully it happens. O'Reilly's an interesting one because he's kind of different than the other big name guys. Like, I guess Taves might be kind of in the same mold, but like Kane is an electric offensive guy. Obviously, Timo Meier's putting up great stats. Bo Horvat's putting up great stats. O'Reilly's had a really an awful year based on health and even when he was playing. So I'm curious how you think the Leafs would approach that based on their history. Like, he's better than Foligno, clearly, but they got burned so badly with that. Do you think Dubas would be gun-shy to take a run at O'Reilly because of that history?
Maybe not the history, Brian. Maybe just, you know, flat out, it really wasn't Foligno's fault. And, you know, there was injury and there was other things that factored into that. But when you give up the assets like that, I mean, that leaves a stain. There's no doubt about that. So then you look at what's being speculated by others around the NHL. And you see Matthew Nye's name in the mix. Well, why shouldn't he? Like, why shouldn't Toronto consider trading him? Like, I'm not saying he's in play, but why wouldn't you consider that? Unless you're 100% rock solid certain he's going to step into your lineup and maybe not initially be a difference maker. I mean, come on, it's the National Hockey League. You don't go from NCAA hockey to being a difference maker. But when you look at the group that you have, I feel like you have to consider just about anything that is going to tip you over the top. I don't have a name in place yet. We've speculated on the winger that Toronto might be interested. Is it a defenseman? I mean, how do you know? And honestly, fellas, you know, it's we talk about this every week, but it's still too early. It's still too early. Not like the teams don't know yet in terms of the buyers or the sellers who's all in and who isn't. And when you get that definition, then the market shifts. And is Toronto going to get to that point? Seems like they should, right? Seems like they should. But are we sure they're going to get there? And if they do, then I think everything has to be considered. The problem with O'Reilly is, where are you playing him? Is he a center or is he okay with shifting in the wing? And if he's not, then who's shifting in the wing and what's the payback to the St. Louis Blues? Traditionally, it's always that first-round draft pick and a prospect. And maybe that first changes to a lower pick, a second-round pick, if the prospect is legit and a real good prospect. And I don't think Dubas is ready to show his hand yet.
Well, we'll leave it there, Dregs. We've got a bunch of great games tonight. So enjoy those, and we'll do it again soon. Thank you for this.
Okay, guys. Have a great night.
Darren Dreger, a TSN Hockey Insider.
Fascinating stuff, like what you're willing to get rid of. It's like sometimes you just got to say, I'm not sure. If it's like, if it's an I'm not sure about this, whether it be a Lafreniere or a Shane Wright, it's like if I'm a GM, and I would never be a GM, but I'm pulling the trigger on a question mark kind of player. You know what I mean?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, that's what makes the trade deadline, I think, so compelling. There's got to be a follow through, and there's got to be a payoff. Deals have to happen to make it feel like it's worth, you know, speculating, and it's water cooler material, because there's so many different teams that are in so many different situations. You know, like the Leafs are clearly sellers or buyers. Like, they're clearly buying.
Dude, look at the New York Islanders, Hayes. They're dying for a guy to score a goal, and they can't pull the trigger on a trade.
And like, look at the Raptors. Different sport, but they're thinking of moving like prominent pieces out. You got to make a decision on which one is the right guy to go.
Right.
And if you're also on top of that, are you fully committed? You know, are you unloading multiple guys? Is it just one or two guys? Are you going to be bold and your original, you know, projections in terms of how you thought this was going to work? Like, the Raptors are for me, even more interesting than the Leafs, because the Leafs are going to be good regardless of what happens between now and March 3rd. And they're going to make moves, and if it's patchwork moves, so be it. If it's a monster move, awesome, and I'm kind of hoping that that ends up happening. But the Raptors could be dealing with, like, significant change. And the noise that will come back if they don't make that, I think that's what they're risking, is if they don't make big moves, people, I think, are going to freak.
Right.
Because I think people in Toronto are like, all right, let's go. You know, like, let's tank. They're on this 7-game road trip. It's a monster roadie, a 7-game road trip. And anyone still thinking, like, they're assessing what happens on this trip will make – no, they're not.
Just do it.
They've made up their
like
mind.
It's like anything else. People say markets will freak out if you do this. Or the big thing in Toronto was the Toronto market would never do a rebuild.
Mm-hmm.
if you just force it on them, they got to suck it up and do it anyway. So just do it.
Right.
Well, exactly. And sometimes you got to rip off the Band-Aid, right? Like this has got 2017 Blue Jays vibes to it, where Bautista was still there and Edwin and Donaldson.
Yes, it's not working and it's not going to work. So just stop trying to act like it is.
Exactly. You know, it's, yes, you might have, you got to bite the bullet for a couple of years, but guess what? Blue Jay fans are not complaining now. Mm-hmm. All right, you sucked in 18. You were brutal in 19. Guess what? The last few years, you've been a damn good team.
Yeah.
You know, and
the only thing you got to consider is Scotty Barnes' development. You don't want to get it to a point where this guy's his curve is not continuing to go in the right direction because you're so bad.
Well,
so you got to insulate him to some degree where his development is not stunted.
Absolutely, and they're not going to go full bore wipe it all out. It's not like Siakam, Anunoby, Van Vliet, Trent are all going. Like, that's not going to happen, nor should it happen. But I think it's also what would be great for Scotty Barnes, and this doesn't come up enough, is get another young stud who could take some heat off him, right? Like, that's
why not?
The Jays, yeah, you had Vladdy, but Bo was here too. Matthews was coming, but so was Marner, right? Like, give him someone else that if Barnes is off, okay, well, go look at this other toy, you know, in terms of a young player that's up and coming. You can focus on different guys. Let them build together, and I think that would go a long way is – you can bottom out, which they're doing anyway. You get a high-end pick, a guy with uber talent that's projected to be very good. Pair him with Scotty Barnes. Now you're talking, right? Now Barnes doesn't have to be the man every single day. All right, Leafs Rangers tonight. The Raptors are in Sacramento playing the Kings tonight. It's actually, they're only like 3.5-point dogs last time I checked on FanDuel. Like, the Kings have been putting up numbers, man. They've been winning ball games. We'll get to our best bets brought to you by FanDuel later this hour. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050 and on TSN 2. All right, Leafs Rangers tonight. We've been talking about tanking in the NHL, and I saw Mark Masters just went back and dug up one of his old lineups from February 20th, 2016. All right, let me run through these forward lines for you quickly. I legitimately was looking at it in the there are a couple guys I don't even remember. Like, I don't remember that guy. The top line was Leo Komarov, Nazem Kadri, Peter Holland. Love those guys. We love Pete, but he was top line right wing. Mark Arcobello was the center on the second line.
Oh, yeah.
I don't even remember that guy playing right in Toronto.
If you had told me he was a Leaf, I'd say I don't remember that. I don't.
Yeah, like that did not happen.
That didn't happen. Colin Greening was on his left side, P.A. Parent on the right. There it is up on TSN, too. Sean Mathias, no idea. He's up in the alumni box possibly tonight. Nick Spaulding is third-line center back in 2016.
Uncle Ricky Spaulding from Nashville?
I guess. Well, yeah. And Freeze was
Byron
on the fourth line.
Byron Freeze, yeah.
Byron Freeze, yeah.
Rich Clune.
Is Brad this the Boyd, tank year, obviously?
Evil. A few of these guys are obviously still in the league. Here's what always has been a sore spot for me. That year, Komarov made the All-Star team, correct?
Yes.
I remember saying on the show, he's a third-line winger, and Leaf Nation jumped on me like I, you know, cut his leg off, or like I stole his firstborn. And I was like, I'm just being honest. Like, he's a third-line winger who's having a good year. Like, but it was like, nope, don't go near, you know, our all-star,
can't trade
Leo
him.
Komarov.
Can't trade him.
And I was just being honest, saying, like, on a good team, like, he's a third-line left winger, you know? And
yeah,
no,
but
like,
people don't like that.
I got chewed on for like a week.
I remember that.
Do you remember that?
Yeah, well, listen, we talked a lot about it, that he was having a good year, but it was
based on
opportunity and everyone else was terrible. Listen, let me run through a couple of names here quickly before we get to some other stuff.
Yeah.
And you tell me if you remember these guys. Rinat Valiev.
Valiev.
Do you remember him?
I've never heard that name before.
Yeah.
Yes, no, defenseman played 10 games. 10 games for the Leafs. This guy, there's no way this is true. Like, this guy, this is a plant. Andrew Campbell. Do you remember Andrew Campbell?
That's a second name. I've never even heard of that name.
He was a Leaf. He played 10 games for the Leafs, or 6 games for the Leafs that year. He had played in Arizona for 33. Yeah. And he played in L.A. for three games back in 13-14. It was a Sioux Greyhound. Hey,
yeah.
There you go. He should try to get back into the lineup tonight. Might be possible. Victor Louvre. Remember Victor?
Yeah, Victor Louvre. Yeah, for sure. Yeah, like he
for
was.
For sure? Okay.
I remember. L-O-O-V.
Victor Louvre.
Yeah, absolutely,
L-O-O-V.
Victor Louvre. Yes, we remember.
Notice how there's a common theme? They're nowhere to be found right now.
Let me check if Victor's still playing. No, yeah, he's still playing. He's over in the Swiss League.
Sure.
Hey, shout out to Victor Louvre. Still making things happen over there. Tobias Lindberg. He played six. Anyway, like there was the amount of guys who played that year. Brad Boyce played 60 games back in the day.
Boyce's a good player.
Yes, he was a great junior player, really good NHL player. Good Leaf, too. Good pro. That's what they were looking for. All right, so the Viz is out. We'll see it on TSN, too. Joe from the Bridge can play it whenever. This Patrick Reed throwing a tee at McIlroy, it was embellished, clearly. It's nowhere close to outrageous.
Look at this. He goes over, but the backstory behind this, Hayes, like, there's the tee toss. Like, that was a gentle toss. It's not like he spiked it into his eye socket.
Yeah, like,
but this guy subpoenaed Rory McIlroy on Christmas Eve. That's why McIlroy is like, you've got to be kidding coming over here, you D-bag.
Yeah.
I'm not talking to you. He hates his guts.
Yeah.
Yes. And I don't understand how Reed has no self-awareness. Like, you can see McIlroy knew he was there, and he didn't want to talk to him, and he admitted to it. He's like, I'm not talking to the guy. I don't like the guy. We'll play that subpoenaed audio here in just a moment. But Reed is, I think, representing the LIV Tour. I saw a couple people reporting on this today. There are a lot of LIV players that think Rory's taking it too. He's so self-righteous, right? And like, Rory makes sure he gets paid. Rory goes places. He's not doing anything for free either. You know, it is a little bit over the top at times, but this one's not, because Reed is literally suing him. And I think the PGA Tour players take it personally that LIV players are suing the tour because they represent the tour, you know, and they're trying to take money out of his pocket. And here's what McIlroy had to say about that subpoena and what's up with Patrick Reed.
I mean, a guy who's landed you with a subpoena, do you think he's probably not entitled to expect you to greet him with open arms?
I mean, exactly, right? Like, that's, I mean, I got a subpoena on Christmas Eve. Like, I mean, I don't see your, like, you can't pretend like nothing's happening, right? I think that's the thing. It's like, why? That's, you know, we're living in reality here. He's not, so.
Yeah. So
that's fair.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, you're suing a guy. Why would the guy ever want to talk to you? I mean, it's just silly. And Patrick Reed responded. This was courtesy of someone over there at Dubai and Golf Digest tweeting out saying, quote, since my tees are Team Aces LIV tees, I flicked him one. It was kind of a funny shot back, but it's one of those things. If you're going to act like an immature little child, then you might as well be treated like one. And, well, that's a pretty good shot, but also a little plug for his goofy team on LIV.
Dude, apparently Reed's got a goofy team, because I've talked to some people on the inside who actually think Patrick Reed's a pretty good dude, which I found it hard to believe when I was listening to that. But a lot of the stuff with the suing and the lawyers, that's his, like, his wife is heavily involved, and there's this Patrick Reed team that are doing a lot of the stuff behind the scenes.
That's crazy.
He's been accused of the ghost accounts and his wife tweeting stuff about the cheating at Torrey Pines. And it's just, I don't know. It's amazing how these guys, they feel the need to have these so-called teams that are supposed to protect and not get engaged and prevent all of this stuff. And ultimately, for this guy, they're getting him into all loads of trouble and problems that they're supposed to be preventing on the guy.
That's on him. That's on him for not, you know, getting his team in order. You know what I mean? Whoever's involved in it, friends, family, all of that. Like, he's the guy.
No, he is the boss of the whole operation. And for him to say, you guys need to shut up and leave me alone and just let me play golf. You're right, Jamie. That is on him.
That's on him. Like, you know, we all, regardless if it's friends, family, whatever, if these people are jamming you up, or you're not in a position where you want to even follow through with stuff like that, then you got to speak up. And that's his brand. That's his, you know, he's the, you know, for lack of better words, moneymaker there. He's the guy, he's the star in that show. So he's got to drive the bus, not somebody around him that's, you know, propping up or you know, a spouse or anything like that. You got to make sure that unless he's like, you guys execute it, I'm with you. I'm along for the ride. Like, you know.
Yeah, but I mean, the thing is, it's his name. At some point, he's got to sign something, right?
Like, exactly.
I don't believe it that all lawsuits are being launched on his behalf. He's the guy. He's the one that's got to agree to it in the end. He's also a guy with a green jacket. Like, he'll be at Augusta and he'll be at the Champions Dinner. You can't get rid of him, man. Like, I think what Rory has been self-righteous at times. There's no question about that. Being sued is different. That is personal. But hating on Liv, hating on Greg Norman, you know, Rory makes sure he gets paid. Rory's launching businesses that he wants to work because he wants to make sure he's making money, just like everyone else is. But at the Masters and at the majors, these two sides are going to come together, and it's going to be wild. And I think this might be somewhat of an example of how it may be unlikely that there's ever an olive branch, you know, directed to Liv from the PGA Tour. You know, if Liv goes under, if it ceases to exist, they may pick and choose who can come back. You know, it may Patrick Green, they may just be like, you're done, man. You're out. You know, someone else, Cam Smith, you can't come back. DJ, maybe you can come back. The other guys, we'll see. All right, so this was reported. Inside sources at a course down in Florida, a Trump course, reporting that Donald Trump has told people that he won the senior club championship at his club last week despite not playing the first round. He says that a strong practice round on the Thursday would count as his day one score, and members arrived on day two to learn that the former president had a 5-shot lead. So
this is unbelievable.
Incredible.
Like, I think it's hilarious. Like,
dude,
it's just,
it's
like,
insane.
I had a strong
practice.
Because
I've been to that golf course. Yeah. I've sat and had breakfast and looked at him by himself having breakfast. And then you go in to get your shoes and stuff from the men's locker room. And my buddy John, who was a member that brought me there, you see on the wall, men's club champion Donald Trump. And as I just looked at him, I'm like, is he a good player to beat? Like, this is Trump National, West Palm Beach. And like, there's sticks there, like good players. And he's like, he just kind of rolls his eyes. And it's like, what this guy does on a golf course, nobody really knows.
I think it just comes with the territory and the acceptance. If you're a member, this is what a part of it is.
Yeah.
It's his course, and he's going to do whatever he wants, and you have to chew on it. And yeah, this is probably like the AA flight senior club champ, where there would be legit scratch golfers showing up day two who shot 68 the day before. Actually, you're 5 shots back.
Well, that's the thing. Imagine a guy like prepping for a month, hitting seeds on the range, and you wheel in after shooting a 69, and D. Trump is ahead of you by 5.
It's so
And he
funny.
Never pegged it. Like, he did not.
No,
it up.
He had a good practice round, so count that.
That's no, what I mean. You guys scored 3 goals in practice, and you show up to the game. We're winning 3-0 already, and that guy's got a hat trick. You're like, what? What is going on here? It is. I mean, he hasn't been in the news very much, or maybe I haven't tracked it enough, but like, that is a total Trump move. Like, and not even knowing the character.
It's not even surprising. It's not. Like Rick Riley has been covering his golf exploits for a long time.
Oh, my God, has he ever.
And Rick Riley, he sent a tweet out last night saying, just an FYI to keep people in the loop here, Trump has now won 21 golf championships, according to him. These are the different ways that he won. Being the only entrant, the only guy in the tournament, but he won it. Calling in a low score from out of the country, like just he didn't even play it. He just called it in. Putting his name on the wall anyway. That's my favorite. Actually, I'm the champion. Oh,
yeah.
Okay. Yeah, just put my name plant up. It's going to be me. Also, never by shooting the documented best score. So somehow he still wins, yet he doesn't actually shoot better than a lot of other contestants.
I've seen the guy live on TV with a couple hockey players. I think he was playing with like Mike Badano or Jeremy Roenick, and he's scooping golf balls saying, yep, you're my partner, that's good. And it's 8 feet away from the hole. It's outrageous. It's just,
oh yeah. If he's inside 10 feet, it's a gimme. He's picking it up and he's leaving. Which, again, a club championship, you literally have to putt every single thing out. Like, there's no gimmies in a club seat.
Well, they
did you, play in the Coppenwood Club Championship?
No, I haven't done it, but I'm aware of the rules. Like, it's full
rules. Is there a little bit of, like, I don't want the episode on 18 to happen in front of people? Does that creep into your mind?
Partially, yeah, partially. I told you, it happened at the member guest. We made it to the playoffs, and I hit a worm burner off the playoff tee. And it was disgusting. There was like a 15-person search party. It was gross.
Dude, there's nowhere to hide either. It's like...
Disgusting.
I don't know if there's a worse feeling as like a dude doing like dude things, and you hit a worm burner, and you got your partner, and the other guys are looking at you. It's just, you want to just...
I wanted to get in my cart and say, that's enough, guys. Like, we concede. Have a great rest of your afternoon. It's been a blast. I'll see you next year.
Like, shake hands and say, thank you very much. I'll buy you beer in the clubhouse, but have a great day.
Awesome. I can't win. There's five other groups. Like, my partner had roped one, too. Adam, he had a great ball. Like, he little butter cut on 18. You know that hole. He had a great shot. And I sewered the group. And it's my course. And we were done off the tee. It was like, it's over. We're just wasting people's time. All right, our best bets brought to you by FanDuel coming up. Today is Bell Let's Talk Day, as we all know. Mental health is more important than ever, so let's keep talking. It's time to create positive change throughout the country. Visit bell.ca/letstalk to find out more on that. Best bets coming up. Leafs Rangers tonight. Raptors in Sacramento playing the Kings. We'll get to that as well. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on TSN 2. All right, today's best bets brought to you by FanDuel. Bet on all your favorite teams on the FanDuel Sportsbook app. I'm on the under in the Ottawa Islander game tonight. Islanders struggle to score goals. Ottawa, they put up numbers. They can give up a lot as well, but it's a big number, 6.5. I think Ottawa wins tonight, and like a 3-2 game. I think Edmonton is going to roll on Columbus tonight. Like, it's going to be a stat-stuffing evening. You got to pay some juice? Yeah, I do. I do. I think Draisaitl, 2-plus points tonight. You got to pay some juice. I'd put a sprinkle on Hyman, 2-plus.
I saw Yarmo at the World Juniors. He knows. Tank.
Mm-hmm. GM of the Blue Jackets, Yarmo Kekalainen.
He was watching Bedard. He knows what's up.
Yes, he should. And you're getting plus money Vancouver and Seattle. It's a back-to-back, but it's the shortest trip in the league, basically.
Yeah,
and
really.
The coach bump at plus money, worth a little sprinkle. I wouldn't be shocked if they still came out lively tonight with Rick Tocchet.
I agree. I don't know if you saw. Yeah, but did you see Tocchet's response to the media when they were like, yeah, you got back-to-back? He goes, what about it? Like, he started staring at them. It's like, I loved back-to-back as a player. What are you talking about? He goes, this is what I can see what I've got in my team if they're going to show up mentally on a back-to-back. Like, intense. I was dying laughing. It was unbelievable sound from Tocchet yesterday morning.
It's a good point, though. Like, it's just been it's a given now in pro sports. Oh, back-to-back. What do you want out
buddy,
of me?
Buddy, 93% of the back-to-backs I played in, there's a Jerry's percentage. I always felt better on the back-to-back because it was like you were in – 15 minutes into the first period already. You just put your gear on and play.
Yep.
Yeah.
Well, it was like Brooks Koepka said that years ago when he was asked why he doesn't warm up more going into the weekends. He's like, I've been playing Thursday and Friday. Like, I'm playing. My body's fine. Like, why do I need to show up 3 hours before a round? So plus money on Vancouver tonight. The best bets brought to you by FanDuel. So there you go. I just got word that my neighbor did the full shovel.
Wow.
And now I got to reciprocate somehow. I got to send a text and figure out how I can make it up to him. And
I told you, drop off a bottle of vodka. Just say thank you very much. Appreciate that.
Like, because it's a massive snowfall outside in the greater Toronto area. It's like a massive snowfall. So that would have taken a while, and I got to reciprocate. You got to get yourself a shovel is what you got to do.
So did he only do that because we talked about it?
He's trying
to be a hero?
Possibly, because it wasn't actually the neighbor right beside me who I referenced. It was my other buddy, Mike. So, I'll have to figure that out. But
Yeah.
What are you going to do?
He heard you talking about it.
He probably did. He likes a cocktail, so he's probably like, you want to float a bottle of something over? I'm happy to do that.
Exactly. This is the guy. Is this the guy who walks around with
he's Julian from
the eggnog.
Trailer
the eggnog.
Park Boys.
Yeah, I love him.
Exactly.
Yeah. That's awesome.
So there you go. All right, boys. Well, we got a couple of games tonight. It should be a fun one. We're out of here. Enjoy your evenings. Enjoy the games tonight. We're back tomorrow at
4 p.m.
We'll chat then.